Should old acquaintance be forgotten?
Eric, you promised us that your resolution would be you wouldn't sing to us anymore.
He's clearly had a few too much of the
Chardonnays.
Take the black.
We wanted to welcome all of you to 2015.
Welcome to 2015.
It's our first episode in 2015.
But. It may have been recorded in the year 2014.
Yes. Oh, guys, you're giving up. The jig is up.
So we wanted to pop in and say hello before we started the actual episode.
Yes.
Celebrations carried us to different parts of the land.
We are podcasting from the future.
We started in King's Landing and we woke up in Pentos.
Yeah.
Not too far, but far
enough. Explain that. We don't know how.
Yeah.
Lots of Dornish wine.
And then we ended up on a party boat. As
pleasure barge,
pleasure barge in Blackwater, and
pleasure barge.
Zach told the truth. We woke up in Pentos with no pants.
Yeah, Pantos.
Pentos.
No Pentos. Lone. So, you are probably about to hear our music start soon. We wanted to usher you into a new year of our podcast and say thank you for an amazing 2014 and enjoy our first episode of the year.
Yeah, this year's gonna be so good, guys.
I look forward to it.
Tell your father I'm here.
He's here
in 2015.
Welcome to Game of Bones, everyone. How was your holiday? We're getting right to business.
Great.
Yeah.
We're right on it today.
I feel like I'm still knee deep in the holiday because we still got New Year coming around, and my Christmas. I didn't get a single Christmas present on Christmas. I didn't open a fucking thing. No, it's true.
So you still have presents yet to come? Is that what you're saying?
My presents came in the form of experiences, which I will be enjoying over the next several weeks.
A little horse
vacation.
I'm going to this lodge tomorrow in the.
Oh yeah, you are.
It's like it's out of the. There's a waterfall like 60 or 70 miles east of here, and they put a lodge right next to this waterfall, and you can go and like get massages and hang out in hot tubs and look at the waterfall and it being cold and beautiful and have like 4-course dinner and breakfast. So that was my boyfriend's.
Watch out for those hot tubs, Kate. Some of those are time machines.
Oh.
So I've heard. Yeah, I'm hoping. Cross my fingers. God, I'm gonna try every single one.
Kate's posted. We've been hanging out on Skype. It's after Christmas and after the holidays for us, and we're still kind of like ringing it out. And it's not quite the new year yet. So we're hanging out. We're talking on Skype. We're like, oh, it's about time to record the episode. This is so fun. I spilled my tea. Normal stuff. Mm-hmm. And then she drops this photograph into Skype. Because we were looking at photographs, and we tweeted it earlier. So if you're listening and you've seen the picture of the White Walker in Daenerys Targaryen's toy box, thank you for sharing it. This is the new Rollerblades, at least for the very end of 2014.
It's part of the special Walmart collector's edition, which I didn't even know existed. Daenerys looks great.
She's aged
a couple years. Yeah.
She needs a bra though, I think.
She's keeping it tight. Hey, did you guys have a good Christmas/Hanukkah? Are you having a good time?
Yeah, definitely.
Did you get any cool Game of Thrones presents? I think every last one of you tweeted the stupid Game of Thrones ornament, by the way. I'm like,
we did.
Did we?
I didn't tweet it. I did not tweet it. I sent a message to you guys when the tree up.
Way back. Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
It was the text when we were putting the tree up. And I couldn't find that image later when I wanted to tweet it because I saw that Zach had tweeted it.
It was great to, we received those from our friend Jose who, took the time to make them.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're pretty sweet.
Which she didn't have to do.
And Eric's got like a whole, you've got seriously like a whole ammo case full of them.
I got they came with four, and I think.
Four?
They're not all
List
Game of
List out
Bones.
Which ones you have. I have a MuggleNet one as well.
Yeah, it's MuggleNet, MuggleCast, Game of Bones, and Hufflepuff.
I did not get a MuggleCast one.
They came, and it was very, very generous of our friend Jose to take the time to make those.
If you haven't noticed, we're still reeling from all of our courses of buttered bread, right, Kate?
Buttered bread?
Yeah.
it sounds like that's code for something.
It does.
She had buttered bread when she was in France, didn't
she? It's a callback is what it was.
Yeah, throwback.
I have buttered bread nearly every day of my life.
But
I've yet to reel from it.
One thing I did notice, though, is that a lot of our listeners tweeted or posted on our Facebook wall of gifts that they received during the holiday season that were Game of Thrones themed, but also gifts that Zach sent out. Apparently, you caused quite a mess with some confetti that you packed.
Some confetti is still coming out of people's carpets.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it the Lady Ash who was like, thanks, I'm still
it wasn't just like
carpet.
Still picking confetti up 3 weeks later. Yes.
Someone complained that they, well, not complained, but jokingly said that they're, you know, they have to be careful where they walk still around
that
their
they
home
were stepping
because
on
they're
it.
Stepping on it.
That made me really happy. I was glad that so many of them got to go out around Christmas time. And I don't know, whenever I'm sending mail or doing stuff like that, I always feel like it's just, let's make it so fun. Let's put some more love into it. So TLC.
So you surprise people with confetti. Well,
I always wonder what it would be like if I opened up a gift or anything from something. And when I did, it just was like, yeah,
day celebrated instantly brighter.
Exactly. So
yeah,
we're really glad, first off, that you guys participated in our Thank You Game of Thrones giveaway. And I think that officially everyone has gotten their stuff, and my place is considerably emptier. So yeah, cool. I hope you guys enjoyed all that. I still have a lot of it left over, confetti and stuff. I'm thinking about just decorating my desk area with it.
You know what other place is a little bit emptier this week?
What is it?
River Run.
Oh, look at that.
Hey, I was looking for a transition for the last like 5 minutes. Finally found one. Back to Lord Hoster Tully's departure down the river.
Yeah.
Does River have a name? I would have to look at my maps for that.
The Tanglewood? The Tangle something. Is
Tangle
what it's
something.
Called.
Yeah. Tumblestone?
Tumblestone. Tumblestone. Tumbles, correct.
Tumbles.
Correct.
It's the river that from which the Tullys divine their power or gain their strength.
It seems to be implied that this is the river on which the Tullys depart for battle and whatever. Like they sail away down the river. Catelyn makes reference to standing on the battlement and waiting and watching as she's waited and watched so many times before.
I was just like, what did she see? A lot of people die, like a lot of people sent off this way. It's kind of a unique way to send somebody off in a way.
That's like the Viking funeral. It's perfect for people who live on the water the way that the Tullys do. Clearly the river is very important to them. They've got the fish all over their shit. So.
Yes, the fish is all over their shit.
I forget the exact quote that Catelyn used, but she was basically, what did she say?
She says at one point, like, the schools of fish are their last lieutenants or their last.
I know, that was so beautiful. Like, she had a lot of like sad poetry in this chapter. It was like, in the watery halls where the Tullys held eternal court, with schools of fish their last attendance.
It's evident that there are more than the few houses that we are centered around, and that's very obvious, but chapters like this do a great job of giving us like a swift reminder, the people that this house alone commands, that, you know, like the phrase that are coming to pay their condolences to this family. This is just part of, you know, there's wars happening, but Lord Hoster Tully has died, and the phrase need to send people to say goodbye.
I thought it was interesting when they pointed out the difference between the phrase loyalty to River Run versus their disloyalty now to the King of the North. They've abandoned him as the King of the North. They're not into him, but they're still the most powerful bannerman of the Tullys, so they're still like paying their respects to Hoster, even though they don't care much for Rob.
It kind of gives the perfect reason, the perfect subterfuge for the Tully, or for the phrase to be there, to deliver the little bit of news that they do at the end of the chapter, and kind of manipulate things the way that is seen to happen in this chapter. This chapter is really amazing, and mostly because of the phrase, to be honest. You know, I do want to say it's a bit biting. I found it to be a bit biting that Lord Hoster didn't, in fact, mention his son at all on his deathbed the way that Catelyn told Edmure that he did. Instead, his last words were, as usual, Tansy. And, you know, now that we've met a woman named Tansy, a little ways away, and I don't think we're going to see her anymore because I think Arya has moved on. It's just like, it for me, it just feels, I want to know more about this subplot, but it just seems to have gone away.
I think in time, all answers are given.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's like
oh, pop out. He said Tansy, and we were just with Tansy. And it's just like, this sucks. Hardcore, man.
Micah has been, much like George R. R. Martin does, and some of our listeners commented on this at our last live show when we were having lunch with them. Like, George R. R. Martin sets up all of these long story threads to eventually come to conclusion. Micah has been, since we've thought about making the podcast, deliberating and planning about things that are yet to happen, just like, ha ha ha, yeah. Due time.
All like Daenerys, when we were talking about before the show started.
Right, yeah. And by the way, a quick update. Right now we have 22 retweets and 29 favorites.
Oh, wow.
Amazing. That's, it's so cool how quick stuff like that just jumps off. And
right.
Well, Eric, you mentioned Tansy. That was an Arya chapter, right?
Yeah, where we... She was headmistress or whatever it is. Headmistress. Tavernist.
But actually,
she was divergent.
In a more recent chapter, a Sam chapter that we read last week, Tansy is actually mentioned as being brought along in the stores that Maester Aemon has sent them north with. And it's mentioned as one of the things that they no longer have. So clearly, Tansy could be a person. Tansy could also be something else. So we'll find out. It's not like you're not going to find out.
No, I know, but it's just funny because it's like super cruel because now we've met somebody named Tansy, but the mystery stops there. It's like we're not going to find out until it's picked up again.
Right. You don't want to go down that road and spoil because there's plot points that are to be unraveled that maybe you know, they didn't make it to the TV show. So I want you guys to experience it the same way that I did and not be spoiled.
That's noble.
Isn't it?
It is.
That said, having at least what happens in the show to inform the read of this chapter does make this chapter more exciting, I feel. You get these moments like with Rob and Catelyn talking about how, you know, his and Jane's heads are possibly wanted by the Ironborn at this point, and they're fearing, and there's this, you know, this great inflection between Rob and Catelyn, and reflection. They're talking about himself and his life and his kinghood, whether or not he's vulnerable. Just knowing what's going to happen and watching every word that Walder, or, you know, the lame Frey, says is really informed by what ends up happening. And I just think it makes it really a heck of a lot more exciting because you know they're being manipulated.
Yes. It's yet another Catelyn chapter that is just brimming with happiness and singing yeah. birds and rainbows. And not only is she dealing with the death of her father, she's constantly reminded in this chapter that she's lost her husband. She's lost two of her sons. She's lost she's really lost everybody with the exception mm-hmm. of Rob. And there's that moment between the two of them towards the end of the chapter where they're talking about the fact that Sansa has wed Tyrion in the hopes that should Rob die, that Winterfell would then fall to Sansa and then through Sansa to Tyrion and the Lannisters. So, and Catelyn has one of those motherly moments where she can't even imagine losing Rob after all that she's lost already. And so you have all of these emotions running high in this chapter. And on top of that, they have to deal with the Freys, who have been sent here. As you mentioned, you know, they do pay their respects, to Lord Lame Hoster Lothar. Tully. Yeah. But also to bring the terms to which Rob, has, you know, he sent his terms, to Walder Frey and these two are now returning. And, you know, Edmure, of course, is not liking what he's seeing. He even says he sends a cripple and a bastard to treat mm-hmm. with us. Tell me there's no insult meant by that. And of course there's insult meant by that.
Yeah, not only to treat, but to attend the funeral of the late Lord Hoster Tully. It's just, they see right. this as disrespect.
Oh, of course. It's extremely disrespectful that you would send these two as representatives of your family to basically honor your late liege lord. It just shows you the type of person that Walder Frey is. And I think overall, though, with this chapter, you're led into a very false sense of security because even though we've seen Walder Frey take shots by doing things like this at Rob and at Catelyn, let's say, you're still led to believe that when Edmure decides that he is going to marry Rosalind, that everything is good. you know, everything is going to move forward and that Rob has at least saved face with Walder Frey.
More or less. Yeah. I mean, Lothar really paints it thickly. All of this, he's jovial, you know, in nature. He's good nature. He's not, he's the very opposite of a man who would be sent by somebody who's going to murder you the next time he sees you face to face. So it's a very good trick, I think, that's played. And this lame Lothar with his twisted leg since birth has clearly evolved much in the way that we see, or in the same, along the same lines of people like Varys, who have, you know, suffered a misfortune in their youth, but have clearly grown to become master manipulators. And it's really smart. Even though Walder Frey sent this cripple to do his bidding or whatever, this cripple is really, really smart and really tactful, really manipulative, as I said before.
He's like his father.
Well, his father is even more petty, I think. You know, it's right. Just like Lothar has this sense of duty to impress. That's the other thing, is like, for as crappy as Walder Frey is, all of his people, you know, his family, want to serve and impress him. You know, Lothar is doing that very, very, very well. This is clearly, for people who've seen it, you know, it's a trap, but Lothar is painting it in such a way and giving him the right amount of details. Like when he tells them about Winterfell being burned, he's showing them enemies that either aren't really there or are there, but he's not giving them the full picture. Like it's so fun to see Catelyn and Rob lulled into, as Micah said, a false sense of security in this chapter. Because like Catelyn just hopes that like all these petty shots are it. She just hopes that Walder's done. It's like, oh, he sent a cripple to meet with us. Okay, great. Let that be all he does then.
I think it's kind of a red flag that these shots and the shots that continue within the conversation here to the face of the king are even happening. It's just, I don't know. I feel like these guys are, it's so interesting because they're tactfully sound in many different ways, but yet their pride is so strong. They're able to pull off so many deeds, and they later pull off what they pull off at the Red Wedding, which is, I mean, for what it is on their side, pretty astounding of an accomplishment. And I guess they could be lauded in their own circles for what they were able to do, however dishonorable it was. But I just feel like it's a dead giveaway. The way that they're acting, it's just like, guys, like, are we? I realize that you're upset, but and that I guess we're going to be on good terms. But is everything okay? Because Lothar, you've been just feeding me a line of just constant bullshit since you got here.
Yeah, Walder's demands are just that. They're just exactly as annoying as they have to be.
Right.
To keep up the ruse, to keep it believable. It's like, oh, you have to apologize, but I won't take a raven. You have to come do it, you know, to my face. And it's something like that, which is like, would seem really petty, but is super important to Walder Frey's plan, as we know. But it's just like, it's also believable because Rob broke his promise that he would demand something like this. And the fact that Edmure has to wed this daughter, this Rosalind, sight unseen, you know, is like just another one of those, oh, I'm going to get you kind of things that Walder Frey has seen. But ultimately, I think everybody's failure is that they see Walder Frey as pathetic. And, you know, there's all these names about him, and he does take these pot shots, and he's very prideful. It's said like three or four times in this chapter how prideful Walder Frey is, but they think that is it. They underestimate him, and you know, they underestimate this cripple, I think. And it's really just they have to walk into this trap. Ultimately, this is the trap that has been laid out for them so that the rest of the books in the series can proceed.
So I guess if anything, his pride is shading so much of his malice in this situation, and lots
that's
of
his a good intent.
Point. If you were to not take Walder Frey as seriously as you should, then he may be able to get away with some things.
Yeah, it's definitely all there under the words, so to speak, right, as you mentioned.
There's so many layers to it.
There is, but I think that it was certainly intentional of him to bring up the fact that Winterfell has burned to the ground.
Yes. The way he did it, it was just like the whole, I've been here for a while, we went to the funeral, Lord Edmure now missed many times, everything happened the way that it should have, yada, yada, yada. Let's have this stately dinner where we talk about things with each other. Oh, also, very sad to inform you that everyone that used to live, all of your small folk, they're all burned, and many of them didn't escape, and also Winterfell is burned. Like, what a, just, the way he did, I would have been so upset with how this was carried out.
Well, it also means that Rob really doesn't have a home anymore. And, you know, he doesn't have a place where he can rule. If his home has been burnt to the ground, Winterfell, you know, which was so symbolic of the Starks, is no more, then I almost read it as Walder Frey's way of saying that you hold no importance to me at all. And it's really why it's so important that Edmure is wed to one of his daughters, because that allows him to hold River Run as being part of his larger, I don't know what you want to call it, but family in a way. And, you know, Winterfell is of no value to them anymore.
This affected Rob, though. In the book, it says that he turned away as to not allow them to see him shed a tear.
Right.
You know, like, this is the, what I'm saying is just the way that this has been carried out, and just the attitude of the Freys with no regard. It's just, I don't know. So interesting.
Well, they blame Theon too, which is another thing I want to point out. Like, Theon, I don't think he was responsible for burning Winterfell. I'm pretty sure that was the Bastard of Bolton. In blaming Theon, they further cause Rob to doubt himself and feel regret. It creates some of the haste with which Rob moves. And, you know, at the end of the chapter, when Rob and Catelyn are talking, and Rob is like, I need to get back up north. Like, I need to be, we need to settle this thing with Walder. We'll go meet him in person. We'll make this thing happen, because we need to be done with it, so that we still have a chance in this war. And then I need to go back up and see Winterfell for myself, start rebuilding, you know, whatever we need to do, I need to be north. And so this news, again, it's no coincidence that it's being delivered to them, but like, the trap is set. It's just like, Rob is given no time to think about whether or not this Walder Frey, Edmure Tull, Rosalind wedding is anything more than what it looks like on the surface. Sure, maybe there'll be pot shots. Maybe there'll be, you know, a couple more insults, but let's, you know, weather them and get up back up north, because the north needs us. Like, it's very tactical of Lothar to be the one delivering this, especially before, you know, any agreement is made about the wedding to take place.
And it's the timing between battles and between the shifting of power and the terms of this needs to happen immediately, and you guys have to be there not only to attend the wedding of your very favorite Lord Edmure, but also to say that you're sorry. It's just, it's funny because we had to see the tables turn inward. And I know this is Kate's favorite part of the chapter, where Catelyn got to dish out some advice to Rob. She was like, we got to do it. We got to do it, Rob. Mm-hmm. We got to go do the wedding thing. We got to do this ASAP. It's just, you know, it's almost like the table has been set for them and they're just going to take their spots.
She has good instincts about it. And because of the situation that she's been put in, which is very difficult, but because of the situation that Rob has sort of gotten himself into, sort of painted himself into a corner, she has to ignore her better instincts and go toward the danger that she senses several times in this chapter. And she's just like, this is not, none of this bodes well.
Mm-mm.
And Walder Frey is bad, bad, bad news, but Rob has left us very, very few choices. So I think she has this like womanly intuition that George R. R. Martin gives her, and she has to ignore it because people are being dumb.
These problems. We've got so many different kinds of problems in this series. You know, we've got what's going on north of the wall, not to mention what just happened at Craster's on Christmas of all days. Then now, I don't know. It's rough. I feel bad for the situation.
She says in her internal monologue, even, I have nothing to share with him but grief. Mm-hmm. And that just echoes what Kate always says about these Catelyn chapters, is that they're so depressing. And from start to finish, like I said earlier, with her father finally passing away and her really just trying to come to terms with her feelings. I don't know entirely how she feels about her brother. You know, she feels pity for him at times. She feels, you know, like she wants to be his older sister, you know, and kind of treat him like he should. She, you know, she wants to comfort him at one point and realizes that she can't. And, you know, then with just everything we've talked about in this chapter, everything bubbling to the surface of nothing, absolutely nothing going right for her or her son. And yeah, he even says it himself. He says, I've won every battle, yet somehow I'm losing the war.
Yeah.
And it's the beginning of the end. This chapter, I know we've probably said that with every Catelyn chapter, but you really start to feel like things are falling apart. Like, you're given that false sense of security, that hope, right, at the end of this chapter. Okay, Edmure's going to marry Rosalind. Everything's going to be great and wonderful, and the Freys are back to being on Rob's side. But if you read kind of through this chapter, everything is not falling in line for Rob to continue on to be this great king in the north. Even Catelyn mentions to him that, you know, there's nothing wrong in bending the knee. Like, you may want to consider doing that. You may want to make peace with the Lannisters and focus your attentions elsewhere.
I thought that was interesting advice as well. Yeah.
I also, I maybe am reading too much into this, but the passage here that says battles, muttered Rob as he led her out beneath the trees. I've won every battle, yet somehow I'm losing the war. This after comes directly after a paragraph where he just found out he lost a battle. Like, right? They just lost the battle at Duskendale and he lost a third of his foot. But he's telling himself, like, three paragraphs later, he's like, I'm winning every battle and yet somehow I'm losing the war. I was like, you just found out you lost a huge battle. Like, what's going on there? It's almost like his reputation is in his own head as well as everyone else's.
Right. The denial is preceding him.
Yeah, and that doesn't seem like a Robb Stark characteristic. Like, I would think he would be very realistic about how he's faring in battle, but he did just lose a giant battle. And he didn't send him there. He was like, why did they go to Duskendale? They lost a third of my foot. So maybe he's like, well, I didn't tell him to go, so I'm still 100%
It's not my battle
rate.
That has been lost.
And maybe where it is. It's just not a proper fight. And he wasn't there, and, you know, Greywin wasn't, you know, killing shit.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. Yeah.
When Robb was thinking very kingly in this chapter, and he said, what I should have done is...
I should have traded the Kingslayer for Sansa when I first urged it. Yeah, if I had offered to wed her to the Knight of Flowers, quote, the Tyrells might be ours instead of Joffrey's, I should have thought of that. I mean, I like, for one, when these characters have these woulda, shoulda, coulda moments, but it's an interesting proposal that that Highgarden might be on Robb Stark's side.
Well, we've talked about it. We've spoken about it. It's been something like one of those when you think about reality TV shows, like who would the best, you know, alliance be in Survivor if we put all these things together? That would be just kind of a pick your own adventure Westerosian tribunal. Cause... Like, oh, okay, the Kingslayer for Sansa. I guess that's not a very even trade, but you know, when it adds up to Margaery possibly betrothing to Rob and then the Tyrells being on their side, it just creates a different world.
Yeah, because Highgarden isn't necessarily in bed with the Lannisters. They were against them because they were for Renly. But so it could have gone either way. Rob's light is burning out, though. This is not, I mean, the wood of, you know, it's too late to forge an alliance with the Tyrells. And the Kingslayer is still unaccounted for, which is terrifying. It terrifies Catelyn. She expects that news before she expects any other news, but she still doesn't know kind of where Jaime is. Even when she finds out that the imp has married or been married to Sansa, she assumes it's betrayal, but she hasn't heard, you know, she thinks that Tyrion went back on his word to free Sansa, which he, you know, may or may not have done, but Jaime's out of the picture. Like, he had no part of that.
Can you imagine how pissed off Catelyn is right now, sitting in Riverrun thinking about Tyrion marrying Sansa?
She's just like, that fucking imp. Seriously. She says, I should have put him through the moon door. I should have let my sister kill him. I don't know, but it's just like these characters don't know what they don't know, you know? They don't know that Sansa... She seems to ease up when Sansa is married because she's no longer fearing for her life. Like, they need Sansa alive for a little bit longer, at the very least. I feel like that brings that news, while it sickens Catelyn, brings her some peace. She no longer worries about Sansa's you know, immediate well-being.
Just because of the nature of rumor and how long it takes news to get anywhere, there's a lot of assumptions that float around, like, well, if they got married, then that means that there's been betrayal and that I should have known that Jaime would get there and he wouldn't send my daughters back. Curse them. Like, it's just like she's just all mad. Jaime hasn't gotten back to King's Landing yet. Like, he's still working on it. You know,
he's working on it.
he's down a hand. He's in some trouble. There's just no, it's like, just get the internet, Westeros. Just like, follow well, they do follow have, each other on Twitter.
They do have their own form of the internet. She's even worried about some raven lying dead somewhere that had the message that her daughter was safe.
That is
right?
So different from the internet, Micah. I love
it's close,
pieces,
though.
It is not. It is nowhere close.
It's like raven, email. Come on.
Can you imagine if
show works much faster?
Can you imagine if someone were able to eat your email? If it's like you send an email,
it's
you're
like, man, I'm hungry.
Well, I've waited a week for this reply. Probably somebody shot down the email and ate it. No,
can I ask something I was interested in when I was reading through this chapter, though? Because Edmure says it a couple of times, and I just – maybe it's just the way he talks, but he constantly mentions the others. Like, he's like, the others take his pride. The others this. The others that.
Yeah.
Like, I guess it's just a saying of his, but it was weird.
It's like somebody saying, like, fuck this, fuck that. This is a curse in Westeros. Like, it's one of the worst ways that you could, I read this somewhere recently, but like, that's how you swear really badly. Like, that's how, like, the others take you is like, fuck you. That's basically the equivalent of that is just like swearing super bad.
Because we know nobody is ashamed enough of fucking in Westeros to make that a curse word.
Well, I mean, they say that too, like, fuck the king or whatever, but I think that Edmure is, I think he's just a foul mouthed dude. Like that's how they're saying it's like, oh, the others take the arrow or whatever. It's just, you know, he's a guy who swears a lot.
Yeah.
Lord Edmure.
But you know, a guy who doesn't swear a lot,
except Felty.
Stannis Baratheon.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Davos. Yeah. Well, anyway,
well, that's where I was going to go first.
Yeah.
But...
Well, I think it's really cool having these two chapters next to each other because, Rob is really down and out, like on his last limb, like the glimmer of a plan to once again have just one decent sized bannerman with decent power is Lord Walder Frey, and we need him. We have to. So they're like crawling to their only, their last hope. And Stannis is similarly put out. Like he has a boy in captivity, he has Davos in captivity, and there's this traitor's brother who wants to be his hand and wants to make war with this little island somewhere. He's just like, man, I don't really have that much power, and I need to get power back. I need to prove that I'm still in the fight. So they're not too dissimilar, I think, the two kings, Rob in the Catelyn chapter and Stannis in the Davos chapter.
I don't want to talk shit on Axel Florent, but I think that was the dumbest idea anyone's ever come up with. I know that we'll get into it.
It's fair to say, look, once Davos shits on it, he's just because he does it so elegantly. He's like, these are the women and children who were left behind. Your fight is not with them.
It's just wrong.
Okay.
Why would you do that?
He just wants to rule by fear. He wants to rule by fear. This is one of the several methods you can rule in Westeros. And ruling, you know, just kind of making a statement is, I guess, what they would call it in The Godfather, right? I made a statement.
They're not really in the position to make a statement. I understand that the Battle of Blackwater went in a certain direction, and I understand that a lot of his bannermen either died or stuck with him through the fire and the flame. They carried on, or they swore fealty to Joffrey and remained alive. But this tiny island, this place.
Claw Isle,
or island, whichever you prefer.
Isle. Isle of Claws.
I'll call it Isle. You know,
if you're a real pirate.
It's filled with people that are small. We'll call them small folk. I'm sorry if anyone's offended by that. Because
Speaking of, I saw The Hobbit over the weekend.
I'm rereading Lord of the Rings right now, so I'm all about small folk. Mm-hmm. I just said that because Rob was like, all of our small folk. It's just like, Rob, come on, man. Like, these are people that you know are there. They're hanging out in Claw Isle. I understand that there's riches and treasures and casks of wine. And I understand that the liege lord of this place did, in fact, turn back on his vows to Stannis. So your reaction is to siege, pillage, and plunder this place out of retribution for them fleeing in the face of wildfire. It's just not Stannis Baratheon. It's not Baratheon. It's not Robert. It's not Renly. It's not Davos. It's just not what these people do. And this guy is convinced it's the best idea. And I was just surprised, like the audacity for him to take Davos to the side. I wish this would have been in the show because it just shows how rigid and unfearing, and how smart Davos is to not react to this guy's ridiculousness when he's on the top of the bridge and they're walking him toward the meeting with Stannis after he's let out. And he basically is holding him over the side of the bridge, and he's like, listen, I'm not going to like actually kill you if you're working with Stannis now, if you're working with our king, but I've been the castellan here for a while, and I can make a way for you to fall off the side of a cliff or something. So you better go with what I just, long story short, Ski City, and he's in the middle of it.
Ski City.
He's like, I miss Lamprey and his food.
You know, I don't take care of, I don't like any characters who do what this man did to his brother. He took the light out of the dungeon when Davos left. He took the lamp, the torch with him.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because they could have done that at any point. Melisandre threatens to do it. And Davos is like, please, 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 please leave it. And they leave it for Davos, but they don't leave it for the former hand. Like, apparently Davos's crimes seemed somewhat lesser than his because
The light travels with him. There's some symbology there.
Maybe.
For, like, the Lord of Light. I don't know.
I think that what's interesting, too, about the Claw Isle stuff is something that I forgot what I was fucking saying in the middle of that sentence. God damn it.
I find it helps to swear.
Oh, it was about, right. It was about Axel Florent, who's like threatening Davos.
He's a rock
star. He was like, yeah. Axel Rose Florent.
Axel Florent.
Sorry. So yeah, Axel Rose is trying to get Davos to like sway the king in his favor. He's like, tell him that I'd be a good hand. I feel like this is such a huge misjudgment of character. Like, have you met Davos? Like, are you really concerned that Davos is like more in favor of his own life versus being honest to the king that he basically was
just honest, let alone being honest to the king?
Yeah. Like, it's like, do you know this person at all? And I like that Axel's like, yeah, you don't say this. I make your life end. And Davos is like, yeah, okay.
Okay.
All right. You have chosen the wrong thing that I value. Like, tell him, be like, if you don't do this, then I'm going to murder Stannis. That's one thing, but like,
he would have thrown him off the bridge himself.
No, it's not a big deal. Davos doesn't prize his own life like that.
That's so true.
I also feel like he may have Melisandre on his side too. So I don't know that he really has that.
Talking about the light?
No. With everything that's going on with Axel Florent, somewhere in the back of his mind, Davos may know that he's got her protection, because clearly why would she even bother to keep him alive after all of this?
Right.
You know, he's been locked away in the cell. She comes to visit him in the previous chapter, right, for trying to kill her, and yet she spares his life. For whatever reason, you know, he's clearly, whether he likes it or not, in some way under her protection. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like Axel Rose Florent would have any way of trying to get to him without her being aware of it and interceding in some way. But I wanted to go back to the point that was raised about Claw Isle, and you know, he brings it up and it's just such a douche move on his part, right? You have these women and children. It's almost similar to along the lines of what the Lannister men such as the Mountain would do, mm-hmm. in that kind of situation. And it's a really clear contrast of who Stannis is as a ruler. And Davos even points it out. You know, he's not going to sit there and say, yeah, it's a great idea, let's go sack this island that has basically no defenses at all. We're going to, you know, march our, what, 1,500 men that are here on Dragonstone out to basically do nothing. And it's not going to give us what we need. It's not going to solve our problem right now. And Lord Celtigar, basically, he did what was in his own best interest. He wants to sit in his home and drink his wine and forget about all this. You know, he's an old man, and his bannermen did what bannermen do. You know, they obeyed their leader.
I think there's a key difference in what the Lannisters do, or like general raping and pillaging, and what Axel Rose Florent is, but there's such richness in Claw Isle that it would help with the war effort. Like, that's the whole thing, is they're going to get all of these rubies and things that Lord Celtigar has been hiding away, and that will somehow, not only will it, you know, make a statement to Lord Kel'Thagar, who's hiding, you know, over in King's Landing. But it will enrich, you know, it will give Salador San some, as they say, plunder that might, you know, enough to maybe keep him a little bit more loyal to Stannis. Like, there are some, there is some value in Axel's suggestion.
There is value, but I think it was best stated, you know, there's a strong comparison that's made when Stannis says it's every man's duty to remain loyal to his rightful king, even if the lord he serves proves false.
Right.
And Davos responds by saying, as you remain loyal to King Aerys, when your brother raised his banner.
So most good. Badass
baller.
It was such a good, and Davos was like, uh-oh, I'm losing this battle. And then he pulls out that he drops the nuke. And Stannis is like, shit.
Yeah. There's going to be radiation Stannis for like 1,000 years around the painted table.
I know.
He goes, for that, you're going to be, your hand of the king, man.
Like, yeah.
Boom, there you go.
He's like, I never thought about it that way. What a great point.
Yeah, he's like, oh yeah, I did that. I totally did. And I think that it's why Davos is such a great person to have by your side, is because he's unflinchingly honest. He's got Stannis' best interests at heart, and he's going to fight for this man until the death, but he's also not going to blow smoke up his ass like Axl Rose Florent is going to. All he wants, all Axl Rose wants, is to like
party,
cause
and do
trouble.
Drugs.
Yeah,
rock
then
and
kill
roll
children.
Night. Party every day.
Sex, drugs,
yeah.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, totally. But Stannis is like this giant walnut with this hard shell, and Stannis cracks him right open with this statement about his brother.
Yeah.
He gets Stannis to open up so much that Stannis is talking about envying his brothers, about Robert turning enemies into friends, something that Stannis could never, ever do.
Right.
Oh, no.
He's just like, all this huge backstory, and it's so glorious to hear Stannis talking about this. And he's confiding in Davos when he's talking about this, but it's amazing. It's like, oh, Stannis does have a soul. And Davos totally brings it out of him in this chapter.
Yeah, Stannis is likable for the first time in a long time. And I think it might be partially because Melisandre is not physically in the room with him. Like, she's not there. Her presence is there, of course. And he tells Davos that, like, Melisandre is the one who told me to summon you, actually. Yeah. And so Melisandre has
like
become, you guys should just kiss and make up. he's become,
it's like
someone that Melisandre's defending. Like, she's Davos's ally, because I think she knows, like, they're at odds because they both want the same thing from two different approaches. She's still like evil as hell, because she's still at the end of this. She's like, just give me the kid. Just let me kill the kid. And Stannis is like, no, I don't think you should kill the kid. She's like, I think I should kill the kid. He's got a lot of really, really good blood in there.
His blood's good.
Oh, his blood is so good.
Really good blood.
And Stannis is like, he's like, no, it's really weird that you want this kid's blood. She's like, fine.
Speaking of humanizing Stannis a bit, though, too, he actually says that this kid is friends with Shireen. Like,
yeah.
My daughter likes him.
My daughter plays with this boy.
Yeah.
Patchface is enough fool for this place.
Yeah.
All right. He name drops Patchface. I'm so team Stannis right now.
Yeah. Stannis the Manus.
I get that
the
he's
Manus
gone.
With the Planus.
With the Planus.
They're still working on the Planus.
Oh, God. I mean, he's in rough shape, and Melisandre even comes off as less of a crazy person in this chapter. Masterful writing from George to just twist and turn.
Oh, yeah.
These people, when they don't have that much book space, it's not like we're reading chapter after chapter and learning new things about these people. It's literally just the way that our point of view character is put into a discussion with these people that can affect how it appears to us and affect how we feel about it. And I love that. And right. I think that's like Stannis talking about Robert, it was beautiful. Him saying, we had these, I forget the exact quote, but essentially the long and short of it was, there were people that weren't necessarily on their side to fight in the rebellion, and that I guess would have almost fought against them. But after hanging out with Robert, not only did they join them, but they were like really on their side. Like they basically did a 180 flip and ended up giving their lives and time and lands and power, yada, yada, to help this rebellion out. And it just speaks well of what Stannis would love to be able to do. And we got to learn so much more about why he wants the throne And he says it's not that I want it just because I want it and that's cool, but it's mine. You know, like Robert and his rebellion was successful. There are now some people in King's Landing that are up to trouble and doing nothing but self-indulgence and doing nothing but making things good for them and not the realm. And damn it, I know that I'm not a bad guy. These were the people like that. My big brother was the king. I'm next. This is bullshit. And it's just, you know what I mean? Like he's got, he's so right. And he's doing everything that he can, everything that he thinks he can to move forward. And I just wish that he had better people surrounding him, you know, like if he had more of the people like a Tyrion Lannister or even someone like Jorah that was just that was bold and had some decent counsel apart from Davos, because I feel like Davos is can only help so much because at the end of the day he submits to Stannis's will rather than giving him maybe the strongest points of advice that he could so far.
The quote or part of the quote that you're talking about, he says, "I am king. Once do not enter it. I have a duty to my daughter." Mm-hmm. There, he mentions his daughter again. "To the realm, even to Robert. He loved me but little, I know, yet he was my brother." And then he goes on to talk about how Robert was corrupted by the Lannisters and how he wants to basically take some Clorox bleach out and scour the court that currently exists there. He mentions Varys specifically.
Yep.
He mentions Jaime Lannister, and you know you get such a painting of what took place, at least in his mind, as you know his brother took the throne and was surrounding himself with these people that you know ultimately were his own undoing. And Ned's, for that matter.
What he's saying here is that I understand Robert took over, but when he did, it was business as usual. The same people that were there for the Targaryens were there for Robert, and Robert was able to be less of a king and less of a leader that he was in this rebellion in the first place to get to this point. And he became the slovenly, wenching, drinking party animal that he is, and that wasn't to the dismay of anyone else in power, because why would they want some guy to step in and take care of business? And that's what Stannis wants to do. Stannis is like, all right, well, we're through with it. And that's the future he would like to see for Westeros. So it's interesting. I like it.
Yeah. And an interesting bit there, he mentions that Ser Barristan told him that the rot in King Aerys' reign began with Varys. And that the eunuchs should never have been pardoned. So we know that Ser Barristan now is off with Daenerys, another Targaryen, and I want to know what do you think that means? Mm. You know, the rot. Like, what was he doing? What was he up to that he caused such problems for King Aerys?
Just on the surface level, taking so much of the governing tasks away from the leader has given the leader the opportunity to become complacent and to kind of be distracted by other things. While, you know, right. Kind of like the Bush-Cheney situation, you know, like, you know, like Cheney, and Bush is just like, I'm playing golf, you know, that's it's kind of a rude contextual comparing the two. But at the same time, I think that when you take away what Robert had in his case, or possibly even in the Targaryens case, you know, the way that they led their country for so long, and it becomes muddled with inner politics and favors and secrets, that eventually you lose the grandeur and you lose the arduousness that became, or that is what it takes to lead this place, to lead all seven kingdoms. You know, it becomes more about politics and lobbyists and, I don't know, money.
Yeah, and at the end of this too, Stannis condemns three people to death.
Is that what he does? I don't think it's clear. Is that what he does?
Absolutely.
100% is what he does. Yeah. Are you being facetious?
He throws three leeches in the fire. What is that? What is that shit? That's not explained in this chapter. Come on.
Well, he's not wishing them luck. What do you think he's doing?
He's taking the
blood. I think he's playing around with fire. I think he's playing around. He's playing with stuff he doesn't know. And Melisandre may only have a little bit of an inkling of.
Oh, well, I think she has way more than an inkling of what's going on.
Really? Because every time I talk about Melisandre, you're like, she might not be the wizardress you think that she is, or the sorceress. So I don't know.
I don't think that she necessarily has all of the powers she makes herself else to have. But I think that's even evidenced in the fact that, you know, she says in this chapter, like, she doesn't always see everything at that specific time. Like
that doesn't mean it wasn't in the fire. It's just like, no, that's
it
how
takes
she could
time
be wrong.
To materialize, to yeah. become clearer to her. She's not all knowing. She's not a god herself or a goddess in this case.
No, but could you say, we know that Rob is going to die. Could you say that that's because that Stannis Baratheon threw one of the leeches into
the fire? That's
the
beauty of it. We don't know. Yeah. We don't know. But two of the people that he names in this ritual are dead, as we as show watchers know.
Yeah.
So, like, there's something that's going on here, whether it's coincidence or not. He wishes them dead, and then they die. Like,
but I wanted to point out that in the book so far, it's not clear why he did that. Because it's not specifically stated what purpose they would have for the boy, either Edric Storm. They argue about it, and we know it's not good. But, I don't know, the leech is
well, it's
just
clear that Melisandre wants to burn him completely.
Instead of these leeches.
They've leeched his body, maybe under the pretense of the fact that he's ill, so
right.
you know, one of the reasons that we're given many times in this this series of why when people are sick they tend to leech them, like Bruce Bolton and others. So
Bruce Bolton just likes the leeches.
Well, yeah, he's a little weird like that, but everybody has their thing. So let's not judge.
We're not going to judge cultures we don't understand.
He's a leech lover, so,
leech lord.
To each their own, and I think that it's able to be inferred here that, you know, he's clearly taking the blood, or she's taking the blood of somebody who has royalty that runs through their veins, and that of King Robert, and they're then taking that and putting it in these, you know, the leeches are sucking the blood out, and they're taking these leeches and they're throwing them onto this fire, and as they're doing so, Stannis is saying these names, and he's referring to them as usurpers, people who should not have control of the Iron Throne or have rights to claim themselves as kings.
Right.
And we know, we don't have the foresight at this point. Like, there's no way for us to know what's going to happen, but it seems very ritualistic in nature that he is burning these leeches that he's naming after people who we know. Joffrey is sitting the Iron Throne. Balin has made his own claim as King of the Iron Isles. And Rob has made his claim as King of the North well before this point. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what this all means. That's true, Eric.
He's wishing
but I think
him ill.
It's clear.
Yeah.
This is some kind of blood magic that's going on here. Blood.
Yeah. And whether it's death or not, you're right, is not super clear. But they are. Stannis doesn't balk at killing people, and especially if Rhaelor demands it. So I think that's clear. It's clear to me that this is like he wants something bad to befall them, and he's hoping that the Lord of Light will help him with that.
Yeah.
And then something bad does befall them. And of course, we see the machinations from every different aspect. We know that it's not some divine hand that comes and strikes down these men. However, the fact that so many people, and maybe it's just because they're kings and everybody wants them dead because there's too many of them. So maybe it's just a happy coincidence, and Melisandre's basically playing the odds at this point. She's like, there's probably people coming after these guys. So I can make this look pretty good if I just pretend that this was my blood ritual. Again, Melisandre, like she's smarter. She's smarter than she appears.
She is.
Yeah. And so like it's possible that she's like, they're probably going to die. Like you can't leave these kings alive. So go ahead.
Right.
Wish for their death. But it doesn't hurt that like we've seen some of what the Lord of Light can do, and it seems kind of supernatural. Yep. And like, what are his powers? And the others are very real. And so, you know, there's something there.
To counter that, though, I would say that the plans to kill Robb Stark have long been in the works. It's not like Stannis throws a leech on the fire and then Robb Stark dies. You know, these are plans that have been put in motion by Tywin Lannister, by Roose Bolton, by Walder Frey. It's not because of a leech that this all happens. You know, so I think, you know, to your point, like Melisandre, she can take credit for it happening, certainly.
Yeah.
But the reality is the plans have been in motion, and you could argue the same thing for Joffrey.
It just needs to be believable enough for Stannis to continue believing in the Lord of Light, because that's like his path currently. It's possible that, I mean, King's blood from Robert is not special at all because he's just the king. He's the usurper himself. Like, he took the throne from the Targaryens, who had it for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're the true kings. Maybe Melisandre, what she really needs is Targaryen blood to really work her magic. Maybe she's just pretending right now because she has nothing better to do.
Maybe.
All of this mystery and suspense.
So much mystery.
Baylan, one thing I wanted to mention, though, it seemed weird in the show. It seems less weird to me now that I'm reading the book, because the Ironborn do apparently have a significant hold in the North. But I'm wondering why Baylan Greyjoy is the third man on the list. Like that's really, Stannis, that's your three main enemies. Like, wouldn't you go to, say, Tywin Lannister, whoever's going to succeed, like Tommen Lannister, first before...
These are the other people who have declared themselves kings.
Yeah.
That's his only... Yeah. Like, these are the men who say that they're king, and he's like, no, I'm the king. So it's not... He's not interested in the politics of Tywin Lannister. He's interested in other men who have claimed what he knows is his, and whether he wants it or not. That's why he calls them the usurpers. So these are the other kings.
Because Arya's got her, you know, her chant before she goes to bed. And I'm like, there's people you want dead. But of those three, it's like, yeah, the only thing they have in common is that they have each claimed to be king.
Well, it's called the War of the Five Kings, right? And
well,
one of
it's called by
dead.
Who? Like, readers of the
Renly.
Book?
Renly's dead. And these are the three that remain. These are, like Kate said, these are the three that have declared themselves as kings.
Okay.
So... That's what he is going after.
Sucks to be Baelin Greyjoy.
He's using a king's blood to kill the fake ones.
I mean, I know as they get closer to the actual deaths of Joffrey and of Rob, I'd love to see more insight into how Baelin feels about his claim to the Iron Throne.
Well, he may not feel anything. But we'll get there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the mystery. That's the part. That's
I would just
out.
Assume that if he's on the list, he's probably
about to become extinct.
Oh, Micah, you and your words.
He's.
Okay, so we have all of these fake kings. We have people that fashion themselves kings. But we only have one prince that is promised.
Just one.
Only one. And can I hazard to say that the situation of Stannis peering into the flames and seeing the ash rise as snow,
yeah,
and seeing the dark parts of the charred wood become a hillside, and see that hill with men, and to see the future in the rock or in the fire. I thought that was just I loved it. It was so much more of exhilaration than I got from the show, because it was just kind of like. Quasi-sexual, like Melisandre standing over his back, and she's like, "Do you see the fire?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, I see the fire."
He was really high,
and I see the fire, and that was great. So that's my own. This whole situation, I thought we, I guess I don't know who it goes to, maybe George, but we see and learn more about what they see in the flames. And whether or not Axel Florent was bullshitting about seeing his own future standing beside the king as the hand, which it seems now after the amazing appointment in the middle of the chapter, it was like Elrond pulling out Andúril for Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings like movies. It was just like, like it's time for you to step forward and do what you were supposed to do. He pulls out Lightbringer and lords him up to a new job that he gets to do for free. I loved it. More information on seeing the future in the fire. And more things for Davos to do. Stannis is the Manus right now, and I respect him more than most of the other characters in the series. So knowing what we know from the show, that you know they rode into the North and they went to Braavos and they were able to grab some cash and grab some soldiers. I'm just excited because I know it's going to be a long road in the books, but hopefully it won't be that long for season 5.
It's funny because that's her line, right? Where she doesn't say it in the book, but she says it in the show, where she says this War of Five Kings means nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's when you get the real sense that Stannis is going to head north. Mm-hmm. And you get, as to your point, obviously, with the vision that he sees in the fire, he's starting to really understand that there's more pressing matters than what's going on here with Joffrey and Baelin and Rob. That the real war lies to the north, and
it's exciting. I feel like I would want to be on his side if I were living in Westeros and this was all real and it was happening. I would be like, this dude's actually technically the king, and he is the only guy who wants to fight the White Walkers. So we should probably help him out right now.
But he doesn't want to do it without Davos at his side.
Oh, Right. And oh, my bad. He's not the coolest guy right now. Okay. Well, he could be cool. All right. Maybe if we all supported him a little bit, Stannis could get a little bit more confident and maybe he'd crack a few jokes at dinner next week, you know?
I don't know. That might be hoping too much. I think with Davos by his side, Stannis is resurrected and he's got some good things going for him. It was really cool what he did for Davos and piss all over Axel Florent and his plan.
Yeah, Davos doesn't want it. That's
yeah.
The funny
oh
thing.
Yeah, totally not. He's just like you can't do this.
He doesn't
that's
think himself
he's the
worthy.
Right choice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, he's like I haven't seen anything in the fire, but I have been shitting in a bucket for 7 weeks. And Stannis is like, after all of this, you're still okay. Fine, you deserve it, pal.
And he's gonna learn to read, but not write. Apparently.
There's keyboards.
Well, we know how important it is for him to learn to read, though.
We do.
Yeah, I love how that develops in the show. Even got my own of the season, I believe.
Own for literacy.
Three, was it? But anyway, speaking of keyboards, people sent us their owns for via keyboards, I assume.
How about ours first?
Yeah, why don't we do our owns?
Well, let's... That sounds good to me.
So why don't
Zach
you give us,
gave us
yours?
His Davos. What are we doing? Are we doing
one own to rule them all? That's all we need this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. All
right, owns. Okay, so back to the Catelyn chapter. My own for the Catelyn chapter goes to young Rollam and Sir Reynold. Actually, particularly.
Weak.
No. Sir Reynold is Rob's standard bearer, and Catelyn just in passing. Sees a little bit of Theon and Jon Snow in him. She says that these boys that Rob has as his squire and his standard bearer are standing in the boots of those that he's lost. And Rob has had to make do with these people that he's got. And these are the people that he's got. And so for resembling Theon, a character who I miss, Owen goes to Reynold.
I respect that. Just realized I did my own out of order. You think we'll be okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, listeners.
My own goes to Sir Brendan the Blackfish for gracefully relieving Edmure of his embarrassment and being a bastion of comfort for Catelyn when Edmure runs away.
A bastion of comfort.
That's a good own.
Thanks.
I like that.
I don't even have one. I know I made fun of Eric for his, but I can't do that if I don't have one myself.
Well, you did.
Give it to the lame Lothar.
That would be lame, though, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't be lame.
It's kind of. Oh, do the two lames cancel each other out?
They do.
Okay.
I'll give it to Edmure for manning up and doing what was best, taking one for the family.
Yeah.
And for always saying the others take you all.
Here, love. I will have to give my own to the decoration of the late Lord Hoster. I thought that it was just fitting. To see him sail away on his little tiny barge of tinder and flint parchment and the gloves that made him appear that he wasn't broken. And I don't know, I just feel like that's more respectful of an exit we've seen lots of people have so far in this series. And
that's true.
I couldn't ask for much more than that myself.
Yeah,
so,
you're not bleeding out in a gutter somewhere. About to go and sink to the bottom of the river and be with Tansy, your pet fish from when you were a child.
It made me think of his long life and all that he accomplished and saw and was a part of. So for your place in the history of Westeros and all that is here, you receive my own, our good friend.
Lord Hoster.
For Davos?
Davos. I'll say mine. Own goes to Axel Rose Florent for taking the torch away from his brother. Well played, sir. Now your brother won't be able to judge the passage of time as well.
Also, he will go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Or mad.
Mine has to go to Davos just for his exchange that I mentioned earlier on.
Yeah.
When he just completely owns Stannis with the King Aerys line and just his unwavering loyalty. There's also a moment not too long after that where Stannis responds and says, I can shorten your tongue as easy as I do your fingers. And he's like, I'm your man, your grace, so it is your tongue to do with as you please.
Yeah, that's a good response. And not to get ahead of ourselves, Micah, your own here, I think we'll be in the running one day for own of the series. I think that was pretty damn good from Davos.
It's definitely up there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just for him to say that, it just shows you he's Davos. I mean, he's just, that's why people love him.
Well, we know how he feels about Santa. So for him to talk back like that and be so, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, he gambled and won. Yeah.
Who has yet to go?
I will give my own to Melisandre, actually. Mm. She's a crazy, crazy bitch. But there's this line that Stannis says. It was Melisandre who urged me to meet with him, meaning Renly, and give him one last chance to amend his treason. And it was Melisandre who told me to send for you when Sir Axel wished to give you to R'hllor. So she saved Davos's life. Like, if the Hand of the King had been able to influence Stannis's decision, Davos would have been eaten fire. And Melisandre's like, nope. We're going to save him. We're not going to give him. Even though Davos conspires still to this day to murder me, we're not going to kill him. We're not going to give him to R'hllor. He's still important. So thanks, Melisandre, because Davos is one of my favorite characters.
Nicely done.
Thanks, Melisandre.
Thank you, Melisandre. I like your rollerblades.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do. Well, now that you've heard our owns, whichever order that you listen to them in, I think it's time now for us to go to those of you who decided that over the holidays, why not go ahead and keep listening to Game of Owns, ignore our family, and read and write in Owns for their other episode that's coming up very soon. And right, they did.
Yeah, first we have over from Twitter, Doug Stevens tweeted in after we asked for Owns for these chapters. He said, easy! Blackfish owns both Edmure and Hoster. Stannis owns the leeches.
That's a succinct tweet. I like that.
Right? I know. It's like, okay, sorry for not presenting you a challenge in coming up with owns for these chapters. We'll have to do better next time. Doug Stevens.
Thank you, Doug.
Roshni Bambwani at Arya Granger on Twitter says, own for Davos goes to the shadows of Davos, Axel, and the guards for marching beside them on the walls.
Ooh.
Own for Catelyn goes to Edmure for really, truly being upset about his dad's death. He's not such a prick after all.
Susan okay. Stacy writes on Twitter, she says, ASOS, Davos 4, Chapter 36. Now, nice. That's also a good tweet. Stannis owns those leeches, Joffrey, Balon Greyjoy, and Robb Stark. She also says, ASOS, Catelyn, Chapter 4, Chapter 35. The Blackfish owns that arrow and his brother's funeral pyre. Mm-hmm. I agree, and can I just say, what a crack shot, because three misses... All of that time, it was almost out of sight, and then the Blackfish steps up.
He knows what he's doing.
Damn the wind. It doesn't
he
even
also
matter.
Didn't drink as much as Edmure did.
That's true. That might, ooh. Yeah, might be it.
But he does mention to Catelyn, I don't think he got a chance to say this to Edmure, but that Hoster Tully, in fact, missed mm-hmm. his first try.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When their Catelyn's father
like,
passed
yeah,
away.
Once.
Yes.
He goes, he missed. Way to bring it down. She always brings down the mood, Kate, doesn't she?
He only missed once. I'm afraid that Edmure's growing soft or something.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry that he didn't hit the raft floating with a body all the way down the river with an arrow off of a bow.
It also shows probably why he lost his last battle.
Yeah.
We also got some owns over on Facebook from our good council member, fellow council member, right? Mm. Small council member.
Yeah.
Kim Gabrielson, who says, first own goes to Walder Rivers for the comment regarding lengthy betrothals. Rob mm-hmm. definitely had that one coming, and it was a nice way of having the wedding, their revenge, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that was good.
Davos gets the second own for managing to corner Stannis with his own principles. No easy task. And of course the quote, as you remain loyal to King Aerys when your brother raised his banners.
Nice.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Kim.
Also happy from New Year, Kim. Yeah, and Happy New Year to all of you listening if we forget to say it later.
Well, the next one comes from Jeff Lightfoot.
Yay, Professor said, Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff, how's your Jeff. Christmas?
Jeff.
Prof Jeff says, Catelyn, own to the Blackfish. He deserves an own for every chapter he's in, but especially for hitting the shot as it disappears into the fog. Davos owned to Davos for the one line, quote, as you remain loyal to King Aerys when your brother raised his banners. Wow, I never thought about Stannis' hypocrisy until that one line. Jeff, you and me both. Jeff says, just shows how much of a better man Davos is than Stannis. His loyalty never wavers. Quote, I am your man, your grace, so it is your tongue to do with as you please. It's really dirty. Yeah.
These are good owns.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm going to write some slash fiction later.
In addition to Facebook, we also got some emails. You can reach out to us, contact@gameofbones.com. Heard from Andrew Robillard, which I don't think we've heard from him in a while. So it's good to hear from him.
He's been around.
His name sounds familiar. he says, hey, I have a long way to catch up on the podcast since I've been trying to read the prequel, The World of Ice and Fire. It isn't as intense as, oh man, I'm going to fuck
Silmarillion.
This up. Say that for
Silmarillion.
Me. To Lord of the Rings fans, but it is definitely massive.
Just put Zach in there.
It could be my age, but I'm about halfway and feel like I've read the first three books of The Song of Ice and Fire, but the backstory is worth the trudge. So a lot of people actually got that for the holidays, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're going through it. There's a lot of cool backstory going on in there.
I want it.
So be interesting to see what little nuggets of information pop up out of that. I know I'm sure there are plenty of people kind of scouring through those pages and then looking for any bits of information they can get to validate theories and other things. So
there's a code in there you can crack that will tell the world's release date of The Winds of Winter. Look closely.
Don't tempt them.
All right.
Frodo.
Are we anxious, excited, Andrew goes on to ask, or scared of the approaching fifth season of Game of Thrones? Though I am sullied. I've been trying to get my head around the changes with the HBO version, and it isn't easy. I've already seen Maisie Williams dancing around Braavos. Now we get to diverge from the books into new territory. Yikes. Best of luck in the new year. I'll keep listening to the witty banter, hysterical laughter, and perhaps share electronically a true northern drink.
Thank you.
So I think we've talked about that a lot on the show, at least in the last few weeks. I feel like we've brought it up about this fifth season and how it's going to differ a lot for book readers in particular because it's going to be new territory,
mm-hmm.
as Andrew mentioned. So,
oh boy.
Who let the dogs out?
That's a zinger. I mean, now that it's turning over into 2015, we're officially saying bye to the holidays. It's just becoming ever more real that the fifth season is approaching. And to answer your question, Andy, Andrew, my friend, I'm excited. I know that I'm not sullied like so many of you that are listening, so it might be kind of strange for me to say that because it's always the same thing for me when our new season approaches. But knowing that there is so much difference, it creates more interestingness. It creates more problems, and the more problems we have, the more conversation, and it's going to be a fun experience no matter what. So I'm really looking forward to it.
This next email comes to us from Mary Mendonca, who says, thank you all for the gift of a new podcast. Hope you have a very good day and a happy new year. You too, Mary.
Thank you, Mary. How'd that email get in there?
Here, Mary, have a new episode, an even newer.
We also received an email from Max Grzowski. Cool name, Max. I like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Or Sky. He says, hey, Goo, big fan of the show. I just read this article in the Times, and I thought you absolutely needed to see this. So basically, there has been a long-standing tradition in the UAE, which is the United Arab Emirates, I believe, of putting small children on camels and racing them at high speeds. Okay, hold on. Let me try this again. The sentence is, I'm sure he typed this in a flurry of excitement, so you're forgiven. Of putting small children on camels when you're racing them at high speeds to direct the camels. Okay, I get it. But since that became outlawed, of course, camel owners are now racing camels ridden by remote-controlled robots that relay commands to them and whip them. It's amazing, he says.
Oh.
Anyway, so here's an article to it. We'll put it in the show notes. It is real. And it is amazing. And how come we do not have a dog in this fight, my three friends? He goes on to say, anyway, love your show and hope you keep up the good work, Max.
Thanks, wow. Max.
Yeah, thanks.
That's quite an own right there.
We don't endorse whipping of camels on this show, but
we do not.
But building robots is pretty cool.
Yes. Just another fun email that we received. So it's always good to see what people pay attention to. It's like immediately they see an article when they're reading the Times and they think of our show. Like, I mean, that's.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny to me.
Yeah,
good.
And we certainly appreciate it.
It's fun that when your sigil is you know, something like, I'm looking at the photograph and there's literally a tiny robot sitting on top of our of our spirit animal. So thank you for this. This is going to be laughter for days.
So those are the main ways that you can get in touch with us: Twitter, Facebook, and email. The first two are just Game of Bones, and our email is contact@gameofbones.com. I fucked that up. And our email is contact@gameofbones.com. Another way that you can get in touch with our show, and nobody has done it since December the 7th, at least here in the United States, is by leaving us a rate and review on iTunes. It is the month of December. It is the year 2014. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable on iTunes. You will notice this when you go in and try to leave a rate review. That's just something with the system. We don't know what it is, but it just happens when you go to our show that you can only rate it 5 stars. Given that we are headed into the new year and that Game of Thrones season 5 is not that far off, there's going to be a lot of people, I have a feeling, who are looking to get back into the swing of things and looking for some Game of Thrones content. And that's where we come in. So by rating and reviewing the show, it gives other people the chance to know what's out there when they go into their iTunes and they search for Game of Thrones. We pop up and we appreciate it.
Can I read a really confusing iTunes review?
Absolutely.
Please.
This is from October 7th and it's by someone named Angeline Irene. Angeline Irene says, "Hey guys, this is at Lucky Gyro from Twitter. Your show is a great way to pass the half decade waits between the books. I've tried many Thrones podcasts, and this one is by far one of the best. Keep up the great work. 2 stars.
No. Ah! That's messed up.
Clearly somebody did not, you know, maybe this person has like inverse dyslexia where a 2 looks like a 5.
Oh no. But I was like, aw, that's such a nice review. And I was scanning through, I was like, oh no, a 2-star review. Did I do it? Is it my fault?
That sounds like something George would write, honestly.
No, I think iTunes broke.
People do it a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I think most people do, you know, rate us fairly. But I think other people just do it. Fairly at 5 stars. Diver. But I feel like other people just do it. You know, the reason we say that, too, though, is that people, when they search us, they actually will find us, you know, that we come up first and foremost. So that's the reason why we ask that you do that. And, you know, we've heard from people who have said, you know, that they've read the iTunes reviews and they've listened to what other people have to say there and they've jumped on board and started listening to the show. So, you know, we definitely appreciate when you guys do go there and leave your feedback.
Maybe if we keep up the good work, then Angeline Irene will leave another review.
Yeah, you know, you can edit your iTunes review so that you can update it.
4 stars. Yeah, as long as we keep keeping up the good work.
Like Taxi Diver did.
Angeline Irene, yes.
It's a free fucking show.
Thank you.
That iTunes is broken because that was a very nice review. And thank you for that review as well. Either way, no matter how many stars you gave us, even though we were told by iTunes specifically that we can only receive 5. So must have just been a fluke.
Must have been. But this is exciting, man. This is, I think, our last episode of 2014.
I was gonna say that. You think?
I don't know. Shit could happen. We could get a trailer tomorrow.
For real. It's kind of a scary thought that 2014 is coming to a close, but also this is officially, once we get done recording this here in a few minutes, the last episode of Game of Thrones in 2014. The rest of it is in a completely new year, and the future is ahead of us, my friends and listener friends, too.
It's crazy. We're going to get Game of Thrones season 5, I would think, within, you know, at least
2 weeks.
The later part of January. Yeah, we're going to start to see some stuff that is official as opposed to
fan-made.
Other things that we've seen. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll get another few direct messages from the Three-Eyed Raven. And, hopefully we get a release date for the Winds of Winter. You know, looking ahead till 2015, that's something that I think a lot of Game of Thrones fans are anticipating. It's been long enough. I'm not one of those people that's going to jump on his case and say he needs to write faster. I think that, you know, it's his work and he should take the time that he needs to write it. I know there are those frustrated by it, but I think it's fair to hope that we get a release date at some point in 2015.
I hope so.
I'm excited for 2015. I've said it many a time before, but I'm super excited for the new year and for season 5 of Game of Thrones.
That's what the show's called, Eric.
I always say owns by accident. You know this.
Yeah.
We all do this. It's the curse of
you
the...
You do it intentionally. It's 100% intentional.
No, it's absolutely not. But
I do it too.
I think this has been our first year that we've continued through the holiday season without a break, and it's been a lot of fun. So thanks again for... It's
been our first year with Kate too.
Yeah, yeah. It's been wonderful.
Thanks, Kate, for coming on board.
Yeah,
you're
She's a beacon of light in my life, Kate.
Aww. Stay with us for the new year, Kate.
You are.
Happy New Year, guys. guys.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you.
And again, to all of our listeners, we just remembered it. Have a happy freaking New Year. Make sure that it's a blast. Enjoy. If you don't have anyone to kiss at midnight, find someone. You got a few days. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Kiss Stannis. Stannis Manus is looking for a kiss, I think.
He'll be kissed by fire.
Spoiler.
No, that's just Melisandre's kiss.
Eric's like...